Support for this podcast and the following message come from Lagunitas Brewing Company, challenging the status quo and crafting stories along the way. Featuring a wide range of innovative craft brews and non-alcoholic options, it's good to have friends. Learn more at Lagunitas.com.
From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras.
And I'm Ana Maria Sayer. Let the chisme begin.
Desperté un día sin sentir ganas de querer seguir. Algo llamé un día en mi cama.
That is the sound of rebirth, specifically the sound of Carla Morrison's rebirth.
Carla is a vocalist who, well, I don't know. She's honestly more than a vocalist. She's kind of the stuff of legends.
No doubt. Her clear and compelling vocals give her an honest and affecting sound that has all of us gripped since we first heard her music here on Alt Latino in 2010. I saw her at Vive Latino in Mexico City a couple of times. And I was so impressed with how her audience hung on every word.
But that is and was her power, right? The Carla that I grew up with is a Carla who said, literally, déjame llorar. And I was like, seriously, déjame llorar, like Carla. Like, I felt that emotion. I felt that depth. And I think we all did. I think that's why people gravitated towards her. She was this artist who put everything out there in whatever she was feeling, in whatever moment, and whatever kind of emotógica energy we were feeling at the time, we could channel into that emotion with Carla, and she would be there right with us. And that was really powerful, and that was really important. But then all of a sudden, she stopped. She went away.
She stopped performing. She didn't release any new music. She was kind of just a blank slate there for a while.
Where she went and why she went is what we get into this week.
The story behind her break is a fascinating story that I think resonates with the times, and it has to do with connecting back into ourselves and into our emotions.
The Carla that we're seeing today in this new music, the Carla that we were able to sit down and talk to, is a vastly different Carla than the one that we grew up with, right? Or that I grew up with, Felix, sorry.
Thank you for pointing that out.
Just want to clarify for the people at home.
A little age difference.
This idea of rebirth, it's actually the title of her new album. It's called El Renacimiento, and we're going to hear from her where we talked to her in a quiet little corner from the recent Latin Alternative Music Conference in New York.
Despertar junto a ti es ya no tener miedo a tanto desconsuelo que una vez tuve en mí.
Welcome back to Alt Latino. It's been a long, long time.
Thank you.
It's been a while since we last spoke. We've been kind of keeping in touch over the years following your career. A lot has happened recently that has changed about your style, your sound, your aesthetic. Can you talk to us a little bit about where that came from? What's been going on, and how did you arrive at this point right now?
My new album is called El Renacimiento, and it's about the renaissance of my career, I guess. Around 2017, I decided to make a pause to my career because I was pretty depressed, and so I took time off, you know, the industry and my career and everything, and I moved to Paris, and I went to school for French and for music, for jazz music conservatory. I started visiting the museums in Paris, and then I started gravitating towards all these beautiful paintings that were from the Renaissance, and I was like, what is this? Like, why are these prettier than these others, right? And so I started reading about the Renaissance and what it meant back then. It resonated a lot with me and how I was approaching my life, trying to change everything, like the way I was listening to my music, the way I was creating it, the way I was writing it. That made sense with me. And I said, okay, you know what? Like, I think that's how my new album's going to, you know, the concept is going to be about the Renaissance, because I feel like I've kind of felt a little bit dead inside, and I have to come back to life, but in my own terms, and not making music only about love, but also about the struggles that I've been going through, and allowing myself to sound however I want to sound, because for the longest time I was attached to my guitar, which I love and I'm still attached to it, but I really wanted to open a space where I would allow myself to sing differently and make music differently, talk about my anxiety, about my depression, about self-love that I didn't have or practice, and also make like a pop album, because all my music was a little more alternative. So to have a pop album was like something that I just wanted to do.
One of the first times that we met was here in New York, and it may have been during LAMC. That was a completely different Carla Morrison back then. It was very, very, very early in your career.
Yes. Yeah. That Carla was scared.
Really?
I mean, she wasn't scared, but I think I was kind of going through it all. Like, I was living my young self. I was really confident, but in the same way, I was very scared, because I was trying to learn how to navigate this industry, because it was all hitting me too fast. This industry can be very demanding, and if you don't know who you are, you'll get lost, and then you don't know what you stand for. That can affect your human part of being an artist, because first you're a human, then you're an artist, you know? And so if you don't have that figured out, it can be pretty challenging.
I feel like hearing that story, I had no idea that you went and did that, and I feel like going to Paris and like spending some time away, it's so romantic. It's like to just like lose yourself in the art and to study something different. And can you describe what that experience is like for you, like the return when you came back and you were like, I spent this time away, I learned all these new things. Like, what felt the most different to you?
It was also a little slow, because even though it was very different from now that I live in LA and it's all, you know, I have to drive everywhere and I smell the smell of donuts and hamburgers everywhere I go. And, you know, I don't see people on the streets, and it's just so different. At the same time, we're still going through the pandemic, so there wasn't a lot of things I could do outside. So it was a little slow. But I think the first thing I felt was that I wasn't going to allow work to be a priority in my life anymore. You know, and I wasn't going to try and overwork myself to prove anything to anyone. I never really gave a damn for anything of that, but this time more so than ever, because I feel like more now in social media age, like everybody's so hungry to be famous and to make a viral song and to just be the person that's being talked about. But that's easy to do now. You can do stupid shit and just become a meme or a viral thing, and that doesn't mean anything. I don't know. I just felt like, okay, now more so than ever, I'm going to take time with my art. I'm going to take time with my husband and my plants and my doggies and my life, you know, and finding the meaning of my own life, you know, and not be worried about trying to fit into the LA life and the industry life and everything that they tell us that we have to do or be in order to be valuable to society. That's just a lie. So that was the first thing. And then many other things have come. I mean, I'm also very grateful for the beautiful weather in LA. It's nice and sunny. It's beautiful. And just having family close and having a house now and having like this beautiful life that I've been working towards. And now I'm home and I bake and I make my own food. And it's just beautiful to have that too. So it's been different, but at the same time, it feels like home too.
It's so funny because Felix and I were kind of having a conversation about this in a way. Differing views around work and life and how to find the balance between all of those things. And I believe that having that slowness and that stillness and that separation from work is really a very important form of self-care and self-love. Yeah. And having that experience and prioritizing those things, what inspired you to then come back and share that with your community and with fans and with people who had followed your music and really be authentic and forthcoming in your art with that?
I think what inspired me is that I've been put in a situation where my dad was adopted by this English American that was from Liverpool and gave him his Morrison last name. And so my dad gave us better opportunity at life and work and everything. And so I've had this ability to really separate myself from the Mexican culture at some points. I've noticed that in, like, let's say when I was living in Phoenix, Arizona, I could talk about my mental health. I could really explore that part of me. Whereas in Mexico, it's like, mija, you're not loca. Like, and I'm like, no, I'm not loca, but I need to go to a therapist because I will maybe turn into a loca pretty soon. And then in Paris, mental health is talked about all the time. And you can agree to disagree and people have conversations. And one of the things that I learned in Paris was crazy, but it was the no. People would be like, if somebody would say, hey, can you lend me that? And somebody would say, no. And it wasn't a big deal. It was just like, oh, okay. And I was like, oh, my God, there's no drama. Like, nothing's going on. And so I remember thinking, man, like, people are so honest and blunt, which is kind of great. I feel like in our Latino communities and, like, people of color, we don't really allow ourselves to put, like, limits and all that stuff. And so I feel like with mental health and with my personal journey, I felt like the necessity of bringing this to my audience that sometimes doesn't allow themselves to feel depressed or even acknowledge that they might be going through something or anxiety. And I listened to my older songs, which I still love, but I'm like, fuck, I was toxic. Mm-hmm. Like, I was, like, singing to this guy, like, please love me back. I'm like, why was I doing that? But, of course, I didn't know better. And now I see them as beautiful love songs that come from that innocent part, you know? Buscando tus manos que solían protegerme y sostenerme. That time I was like, okay, this is crazy. So I wanted to share that with the people that listen to my music just because I feel like mental health is so important nowadays, more so with the pandemic. It just made us really see how our lives were going. And now it's like, how do you really want to go back to life? And so the Renaissance to me was kind of like, the whole album was like an exercise for people to use it as a mirror with their lives and be like, do I really want to go back to that job or marriage or friendships or career? Like, do I really want to be living to somebody's expectations or to mine? Am I being true to myself? And that's what I did. You know, I had to move away very, very far to just really listen to myself. I didn't know French, so I spent a lot of time in silence. And that really made me understand, like, listen to my voices that were like, hey, haven't talked in a while. What do you think about this? The only thing I could say was bonjour and, like, au revoir and merci, but that was it. I couldn't say anything else, so I had to really spend time in silence. In a new city, I would get lost. I was just counting on myself. Nobody cared about me. And so, I mean, obviously my husband, but it was just, like, so different. So just to spend that time and cultivate that friendship with me was beautiful, and I feel like everybody should aim for that. The Renaissance is about that.
Your fan base is well known for being very, very dedicated to your music. And and you were such an influence on that generation of musicians, indie musicians, that your music had a huge impact socially as well. Are those folks coming along with you on this journey? Do you get the sense that they are also taking command of their lives in the same way? Are they following your lead, or were they already in that process? Because I think everybody, we're all thinking about mental health, like you said, after the pandemic. Yeah. Do you feel like when you're doing shows now that they're all along with you on that?
Yes, yes. It feels alive. And a lot of my fans are Latinos, and they love the message of being able to just come back to life in their own terms. And I don't think I've ever been so, like, every time I have meet and greets or shows, what usually comes up all the time is, like, thank you for talking about this. Thank you for using your platform. Thank you for Martes Ansiedad. And, like, you love yourself, or you talk about mental health, or you just make it so simple and easy. And not a lot of artists are talking about it. You're so open about it. And, like, just so much. It comes so much. And every Tuesday, I do this Martes de Ansiedad, where I talk about, like, how everybody's feeling. And sometimes we talk about how to, like, let's say, oh, if you have a loved one and he's having a, or she's having a panic attack, how would you act? Or what do you think it would help me to feel better? Or things like that. And I get so many questions and so many tips and so many, like, just it's just crazy. And I'm like, yeah, people want to talk about this. And Latinos and Mexicanos and everybody wants to talk about this. And we don't want to feel ashamed anymore or como apuntados, you know, like, oh, he's feeling this way. Like, no, like, it feels like they're really happy and grateful for it. And also my whole show is about the five stages of grief, kind of. I got very inspired by Dr. Kubler-Ross, and I tell them we're going to go through a renaissance all together. So the whole set list is my old songs and new songs, but they all go through different phases. So we all go through it together, and we really, like, face whatever we're going through. So we go through, like, a phase where, like, we're talking shit. This is our, like, salty songs. And we're all like, yeah, we don't care, you know? And then we go through a phase where, like, we love ourselves. And then there's this phase where, like, okay, I need to accept I'm going through my shit. I was the toxic one. I need to clean up my mess. And then you go back to, like, okay, I can fall in love again because now I love myself and I found myself. So the whole journey of the show is about that. It was like coming back to life. And I always say, you guys can cry, you guys can propose, you guys can do whatever you want, but this is a space where we come back to ourselves. So it's been something that I see a lot of comments were like, wow, this was amazing, or this is my therapy session, or, you know, Carla took us to church and things like that. It's so funny. But it's awesome because we connect. And I think humans, when we connect, it's just life becomes easier, you know?
We'll be back to our interview with Carla Morrison right after this.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu with Black Twitter, A People's History from Onyx Collective and Hulu. Directed by Prentice Penny, Black Twitter, A People's History tells the story of how Black voices found a new home online and blossomed into a force for change while laying down some hilarious tweets along the way. From the memes to the movements, see how this powerful community shapes culture, society, and politics. Black Twitter, A People's History premieres May 9th, streaming on Hulu.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Betterment, an automated investing and savings app. CEO Sarah Levy shares Betterment's philosophy on investing.
No matter the amount of money you have, it's always good to be invested. It's always good to start early. It's always good to save. And the power of being consistent in your habits is really the path to long-term wealth.
Get started at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
On Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we have very important people on our show and then ask them about very unimportant things. Here's U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen.
We are also reliably informed that among your enthusiasms, in addition to macroeconomic policy, is mobile games.
There is some truth in that.
There's some truth in that.
Join us for the NPR podcast that considers all the other things. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Sounds spiritual. I'm like, all I want to do now is be a part of the Renaissance. I'm like, that sounds amazing. Because this concept is so prevalent that, like, part of the cultura is this hesitancy around talking about all of these subjects. And how does that feel for you when then you have this, let's say, Mexican audience that is responding so positively? How does that impact the way you feel about your own Mexicanness?
I've always felt like a gringa in Mexico, like in Ciudad de Mexico, because it's like so Mexican and I grew up in the border. But when I live here in the States, I feel very Mexican. So I've always been half and half. But one thing that I've noticed throughout the years is that all of my songs could be rancheras. All of them. My husband makes fun of me because he's like, babe, like, you could totally do a ranchera album because they all sound like that. So it's in my veins for some reason, and I always have it in every song. I always feel very Mexican, and I also feel like there's all sorts of different Mexicans también. They don't all have to be, you know, into tacos and into machos and these girls that are just, like, crying for love. Like, we're so different and diverse. And some of us move to Paris and learn French, you know, and eat cheese and
or
wine.
A little bit of French.
You know? So it's like, I think we're allowed to be all sorts of different Mexicans. And as long as you you're true to yourself, you know, because we attach ourselves to some identities that don't allow us to be ourselves sometimes. And we're like, oh, no, that's too fancy for me. I can't do that because I'm Mexicana. Like, no, you can be fancy if you want. You can be whatever the heck you want. You don't have to just be perfect Mexicana, because I would be told like, oh, you're Mexican? Like, you're not morena. You're not, your hair's not braided. And it's like, no, but it's okay. Like, I'm Mexicana too. I think it's just a matter of just being true to yourself. And yes, being from a place in the world gives you an identity, but it's part of your huge story. We're past, we're present, and we're future. And I think that's really valuable to always have in mind.
Along those lines, when you talk about that development and going away, stripping away and coming back, what kind of Mexican are you now? How do you interpret your culture now through your music and through how you live compared to what your idea of it was before?
I think my Mexicanness comes with me always because, like they say in mi rancho, yo me fui del rancho, pero el rancho no se fue de mí. You know? So that's always in me. I think as Latinos and Mexicanos, we're always very humble, very loving. And one of the things that would always, like, move me to tears in Paris, every time I would meet someone and they would be like, oh, you're Mexican. Oh, my God. I made a friend. You're like a friend that was in Mexico or, like, something. But they always had a beautiful experience with a Mexicano. And I just felt like that's beautiful because that Mexican that you met left such a beautiful impression in you that you already love me. You don't even know me. You just met me. But everybody had that. Everybody. And that was beautiful. And if I would say, look, no, you're Mexicana. Oh, my God, I went to Cancun. And, oh, my God, your country. And they would always, like, speak beauty and beauty and beauty about my people and, like, everything. And so that made me understand why it was so easy for me to make friends, or it was so easy for me to connect with people. So that Mexicanness, I think, is like being humble, being very just warm and open and grateful. And it's these qualities that we just have. Whenever I don't know who I am, I just look back to my ranchito and to where I lived and where I grew up. And that's me, you know, at the end of the day. And sometimes they tell me, well, Carla, you don't live in Tecate anymore. You're not from Tecate. I'm like, but I am, because I go back and I feel at home, you know. And so I think it always comes with us for sure.
I love that, like the way that you describe that, because it almost feels like you're like pairing those things together, right? Like, what is your Mexicanness and what is your commitment to mental health and to self-love? Because ultimately, to be Mexican is to love, and to love is to be Mexican. And you're just like taking us to the next level, right? Like, you're making everyone see that this is what it means to be Mexican, is to pay attention to these things. So that's, I think that's really beautiful.
Yeah, and I think also the kindness that we have as Mexicans should also come with the mental health part. We should be kind to one another whenever we're asking for help, you know, and not be so judgmental and be like, oh, you know, you're crazy or this and that. And that's why I always say in my concerts, like, I know your parents will probably say, no, mija, no estás loca, but don't pay attention to that. I say, today is today and our times are different and we have to worry about so many other things. It's okay that it's different. And if you need help, go get help, because life is hard. Life is really fucking hard. And you need some answers sometimes, you know?
Volví a mirar hacia adentro. Volví a mirar hacia muy dentro de mí, a revelar el recuerdo, analizar lo que protestaba en mí.
I couldn't agree more with that last statement.
Felix, you're a lot farther down the road than I am. Is life still as hard there as it is here?
You know, what happens is that, as she pointed out in her interview, it's like, as you confront things, as you get older, and it doesn't even have to be age, it can just be an attitude like she has. I'm going to confront these things, because then life is a little easier to manage and to deal with if you confront them directly, honestly, and in a healthy way. So much of what she talked about in her interview about culture, about identity, about mental health, it's all wrapped into the same thing. And it was very instructive to hear her talk about it that's not in the form of a song.
You know, I think there's those musicians who will forever have an impact in the work that they create. And then there's musicians who start to redefine the culture, and I think Carla is one of those. She is paving a path for new conversations and ideas and feelings around mental health in the Mexican community.
You know, when I first met Carla in New York, while she was there shooting the video for NPR Music, she was very quiet, very shy, very withdrawn. And the Carla that we met during the LAMC when we interviewed her recently, it was completely different. It was a whole different persona. It was very, very outward going and very self-assured.
You know, I didn't know the old Carla in the way that you did back in the old days, but I felt like I knew that Carla through her music. And I know exactly what you're talking about, because listening to her music then and listening to her music now, you can feel that change in her. I mean, I loved to llorar with Carla back in the old days, but the new Carla isn't llorando anymore. I mean, she's vibrant, she's colorful, she's poppy, and she's still just as open and just as honest and just as authentic, just bearing a whole different set of emotions this time.
And that message that she's projecting now of self-care and self-worth is attracting just as many people as that she did in the past.
And that's the beauty of an artist like Carla, right? An artist who has this kind of power, who has been so upfront about who they are over the course of their career, no matter how many times they transform, no matter how many revelations or renaissances they have within themselves, people like us, people like me who have been listening since the beginning, we're willing to follow them anywhere. And that's the beauty here, is that someone who I maybe was my emo toxica queen, who had me crying in maybe not all of the best ways, now is speaking openly about her anxiety, which is really transformative for a community, because we're all ready to meet her in those conversations now. Now I got to get my abuela to listen to her.
Be very curious to know what she thinks.
She'd be like, this is interesting.
That'll do it for this week on Alt Latino. Alt Latino comes to you from NPR Music. Our editor is Hazel Sills, and the Alt Latino intern is Vita Dadu.
She's the one in charge of our super sick playlist that gets updated every single week with new music on Apple Music and Spotify.
I'm Felix Contreras.
And I'm Ana Maria Sayer.
Thank you so much for listening.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Lisa. Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Visit Lisa.com to learn more. That's LEESA.com.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capella University. With Capella's FlexPath learning format, you can earn your degree online at your own pace and get support from people who care about your success. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
These days, news comes at you fast. But the truth? Getting there takes time.
There's something that hasn't been disclosed yet.
Embedded is a podcast that takes the time to look beyond the headlines.
How did this happen? How did we get here?
With original documentary storytelling. Listen to NPR's Embedded wherever you get your podcasts.